Hello and welcome to this reflection from Streatham Vale Baptist Church. We're coming to the end of our series on identity, and this week we are looking at Am I What Has Happened to Me? When we look back at our lives, we all have moments that we consider life-defining, things that have happened to us that have affected us so deeply that it left an indelible mark on our psyche, allowing it to affect and even transform our sense of identity. Sometimes we feel that these events or occurrences in our lives mark us so dramatically that it becomes all that we feel we are. We allow it to define ourselves to the point that we can't see anything else. We have the question in our mind, am I what has happened to me? And as we look at this question, we will look at the life of Joseph, a figure in the Bible who experienced a great many things that could be considered life-defining moments. And we'll be reading segments from Genesis that covers different parts of his life. So to start with, we'll read from Genesis 37, verses 2 to 8, and then 17 to 30. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the son of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to the dream I had. We were binding sheaves of corn out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered round mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. And later on, Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wild, in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brothers and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where could I turn now?" Sometimes life-defining things are not so much a single moment, but repeated events that happen continuously for a length of time, so much so they become worn into our identity. In the same way, a constantly running water erodes away the soil to eventually create a flowing river. These influences, these things could be positive things. For example, on school report cards that constantly say that this student is a conscientious child or a good pupil, and that can influence them to make them want to be even better. But they can also be horrendously negative things. such as abuse or neglect. And it can be even the things in the, sort of somewhere in the middle, the seemingly mundane things that still have an impact on who we think we are. Repeated reinforcement of a particular message, good or bad, can leave a deep impact on who we believe we are. Joseph was treated as very much the favourite son. We are told now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his own old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. And this favouritism caused Joseph to become arrogant, boastful, prideful. He would parade about in his ornate robe and tell his brothers, and actually anyone who would listen, about the dreams he had, in which his brothers would be bowing down and serving him. Now, while these dreams did come from God, the way Joseph boasted about them caused much jealousy and hatred among his brothers. And the way Israel treated his sons left a mark on their sense of identity. For Joseph, this mark gave him an overconfident sense of his own worth and identity, so much so that he became entitled. Whereas for his brothers, they were made to feel inadequate, lesser than Joseph, which caused hatred and bitterness to well up in them. Now, the brothers had a choice. They could choose to allow their anger and hatred to fester in them and cause them to act in ways that they would not normally even consider. Or they could choose to rise above their anger and choose forgiveness. But the brothers chose to allow that anger to define the type of person they were. When they saw him coming, their thoughts turned to murder. Here comes that dreamer. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. The way that they had been treated throughout their life, the way their father had made them feel lesser than Joseph, had caused hatred to infuse itself into their personality, to the point that they were comfortable plotting the murder of their younger brother. The result of the father's treatment upon Joseph's brother was that they became insecure, uncertain of their worth and significance within this family. In a society where the youngest was normally considered the least, they struggled to understand their place when they were being treated as lesser than the youngest child. When we think back upon the events of our lives, can we see how the events that have happened to us might have changed the way we view ourselves? There might be circumstances or the way people have treated you that have left a mark on your psyche. How do you cope with this? Our experiences can influence us massively, but we have the choice to decide whether to allow these experiences to affect us on that much deeper level. Do you allow these things to influence your sense of identity? Or do you realise that they are external forces that should not be responsible for transforming one's sense of identity? It is clear that the circumstances of the brothers' childhood did not have to influence their identity and behaviour, as it did not influence Reuben. It did not influence Reuben to the same extent. While he also struggled with anger and dislike of his brother, he was not willing to cause such fatal harm to him. We're told he said, "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. And then when he realized his plan had failed, he was anguished. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Reuben chose to try and reclaim his identity or to redefine his identity, not based on anger or hatred. How might we reclaim our identity from the moments that have tried to define us? So as we've seen, some of the things that happen to us that try to define who we are things that happen over an extended period of time repeatedly. But there are also other moments that are more sudden, one-off occurrences that are significant enough to cause a change in us. I've recently been watching a series called Arrow, and one of the episodes in this series focused on this idea of a crucible moment. There were two characters, both of which had experienced life-changing moments, and yet they reacted to these moments in quite different ways. One of the characters allowed what happened to her to twist her character, so much so that her very identity was bound by the concept of revenge and hatred. She was willing to do anything and everything to achieve that revenge, regardless of who else she hurt in the way. The other character chose to focus on justice, wanting to right the wrongs in a positive manner, attempting to save lives and prevent needless deaths. It can certainly be said that Joseph experienced not just one crucible moment, but many. When his brothers threw him into the well, Joseph experienced his first crucible moment. I cannot even begin to imagine what he might have gone through. He approached his brothers as his usual egotistical 17-year-old self, and his brothers set upon him. They were all older than him and massively outnumbered him, making it easy for them to overpower him. And then they stripped him of his robes, leaving him in his undergarments, making him feel humiliated and disgraced. And then they throw him into the well, probably at least bruising him, if not otherwise harming him. And after all that, they then sat down and ate their meal, while their younger brother pleaded and begged for mercy, for rescue, for his very life. I imagine that he hoped that they were just playing a nasty trick on him and that they would eventually get him out. But that hope would have dwindled the longer he spent in there. And then his brothers sell him to the Midianites. This is a pretty dramatic crucible moment. We don't know how long it was before Joseph was taken to Potiphar. But I imagine that during this time, Joseph was doing a lot of thinking, a lot of praying, and a lot of wondering where God was. Perhaps he was thinking, how could those dreams possibly come true now? So then what happens once he gets to Potiphar's house? Let's read from Genesis chapter 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favour in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favour in the eyes of the prison warder. It is noticeable that Joseph's character seems to change quite a bit between the two Bible passages that I've just read. In the first reading, he seems to be quite confident and proud. He was assured of his place within the family and of the love of his father. There was little to trouble him or bring him strife. However, by the time we get to the second passage, Joseph has gone through a massive change. Here we find a man who is humbled by his experience. He no longer expects things just because he believes he is entitled to them. He is willing to work hard and to honour God through what he does. And this change in attitude is seen most notably in his encounter with Potiphar's wife. We are told that Joseph was well built and handsome, and he attracted the eye of Potiphar's wife, who chased after Joseph and tried to entice him to sleep with her. But Joseph remained faithful, honourable to his master, and more importantly, honourable to God. "My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" However, Potiphar's wife was determined and pursued Joseph day after day, trying to wear down his morals. I think if this scenario had happened to the 17-year-old Joseph, who had not suffered such trauma, he might not have been so honourable. But his time in the cistern and then as a slave had changed him. Joseph could have allowed his experience to embitter him and turn him against God. He could have blamed God for everything and decided he was going to fight back against all that was happening. Or he could have fallen into despair, with depression sucking the life out of him. But no, instead he allowed God to use his experiences to transform him for the better. When we have defining moments, we need to choose how to respond to them. It's extremely difficult to do that in a time of pain and confusion, and yet it is also vitally important that we manage how we respond to events. A quote I read said, "You can't always control circumstances. However, you can always control your attitude, approach, and response. Your options are to complain or to look ahead and figure out how to make the situation better." When my dad died, it was a life-defining moment. I wrestled with the temptation to fall into despair and give up caring about things. I was about to start my second year at university, and the idea of giving up or just going through the motions seemed like an attractive offer. But I knew I couldn't let myself fall into that trap. And so I leaned upon God and told him that I needed him to support me through this. I needed him to carry me because I couldn't walk by myself. I basically demanded for God to be my strength during that time. And I can definitely say God did all that I asked for and more. Crucible moments can be extremely difficult. They can also be transforming to make us better people. But this is only possible if we allow God to use these events to transform us, if we allow God to be our strength to get us through. I couldn't have got through things that I experienced if I didn't have God to rely on. I couldn't have coped with those crucible moments in my life if I didn't know God was there with me. How do you cope with your crucible moments? Do you rely on God to be your strength? Do you call out to him and rely on his presence? Throughout Joseph's life, we can see how he communicated with God, trusted him, and relied on him for everything. Even when we first meet Joseph and he is a self-centered teenager, Joseph still recognized the importance of hearing from and listening to God. Joseph didn't know what he would face, but he did know that God was speaking to him and he needed to be willing to listen. He may have then boasted about what God had communicated to him, but he did recognize that what he dreamt was from God, even when his brothers scorned him and his father rebuked him. And later on, after Joseph was tossed down the well and sold into slavery, Joseph came to rely on God much more. We are told that the Lord was with Joseph, and the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. Joseph was able to survive and even thrive during his time in slavery because God was with him, and Joseph was able to turn to God during that time. He was clearly still obedient to God despite his situation, and acknowledged God's sovereignty, as he demonstrated in his response to Potiphar's wife. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And even after Potiphar's wife had Joseph arrested on false charges, Joseph still remained faithful to God and trusted him. Time and time again, Joseph underwent difficult trials and struggles, and yet he remained faithful to God and relied on his wisdom and support to get him through each trial. Sometimes when we are going through difficult times, it can be easy for us to lose sight of God. We might think he has abandoned us during our time of greatest need, or we might even blame God for allowing us to experience those things in the first place. And so it can be hard to trust that God is still in control and he is with us, giving us his strength to get through each moment. How do we remember God's presence and protection during those difficult moments? For me, I often go back to a poem that I first saw stuck to the door of my RE classroom at school. The poem is a famous one called Footprints in the Sand, and it talks about a person's life journey that they look back on and saw two pairs of footprints walking next to each other throughout their life. But then they noticed that during the most difficult moments, there was only one pair of footprints. And so the person asked God, "Why during the most difficult times did you abandon me, as there is only one set of footprints?" And God replies, "My precious child, I love you and I will never leave you, never ever during your trials and testings. When you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you." This poem has always had a powerful impact upon me, as I remember that no matter what I experience, when I can no longer walk, God is carrying me. No matter what has happened to us in the past or what will happen to us in the future, God remains with us. He never abandons us or walks away. Instead, he holds us even closer when we are struggling and lifts us up when we can no longer stand. As we bring this series on identity to a close, we can see that there are many things that try to have an influence on who we are and who we think we are. There are many things that want to try to dictate our identity for us. But we have a God who is higher than all of those things. God can overcome all efforts to change us into something we are not. God knows who we are because he made us. He knows the number of hairs on our head, and he knows our most carefully kept secret. There is nothing about us that God does not know, and so he is the best judge on who we are, on what your identity is. Don't let the things of the past or the events of the future stop you from embracing who God has made you to be. Amen.